wanted the best. You've got the best podcast. The hottest podcast in the world. The Chris Voss Show, the preeminent podcast with guests so smart you may experience serious brain bleed. The CEOs, authors, thought leaders, visionaries, and motivators. Get ready. Strap yourself in. Keep your hands, arms, and legs inside the vehicle at all times, because you're about to go on a monster education roller coaster with your brain. Now, here's your host, Chris Voss.
Hi, folks. It's Voss here from thechrisvossshow.com. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. There we see that makes it official. Welcome to the big show, my family and friends. As always, the Chris Voss Show is the family that loves you, but doesn't judge you, at least not as harshly as most of your family and friends. You know, I don't know. Where can you find unconditional love? I mean, if you're evil, we don't love you at the Chris Voss Show. But other than that, we'll pretty much love you, even if you're slightly evil. It just depends on the depth of your evilness and whether you're, I don't know, you're overthrowing countries or something. But for the most part, we love you. So share the love of the Chris Voss Show and share with your family and friends. Go to goodreads.com/ChrisVoss, linkedin.com/ChrisVoss, Chris Voss One on the TikTokity, and all those crazy places on the internet. As always, we have the smartest minds on the show. I believe we have another billionaire coming on from Silicon Valley coming up on a new book they have out, so stay tuned for that. The CEOs, the billionaires, the Pulitzer Prize winners, the White House presidential advisors, all the smartest people come on the show and share their knowledge. And if you're not learning something from every show and having an epiphany, well, then I don't know. See a therapist or go listen to the show two or three more times. Someone on the show recently said you need to listen to the show four times to really saturate yourself in it and get the data. We have another wonderful gentleman on the show. Bill Faith joins us on the show. He's a serial entrepreneur and he loves real estate. He loves it so much, he's actually investing in it. So we're going to be talking to him about what he does, how he does it, and how he can make you smarter. Maybe richer. There you go. He's an entrepreneur who's bootstrapped 31 startups and 19 exits to date. He's built a $19 million short-term rental portfolio that yields over $1 million in annual income from a $126,000 investment. That's pretty darn good return. He owns and coaches real estate investors through Build Short-Term Rental Wealth brand, and also just hosted the largest conference in the space with 25,000 attendees 2 weeks ago at the STR Wealth Conference in Nashville. And he has two podcasts as well, STR Unfiltered and STR Anomics. Welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Chris. Thanks for having me, buddy.
Thanks for coming, Bill. Give us your .coms. Where do you want people to find you on the interwebs?
I mean, buildshorttermrentalwealth.com or billfaith.com is the easiest place. If you have questions, I'm accessible in an open book on Instagram, billfaith73. I'm everywhere like you, TikTok, LinkedIn, you know, pretty much every place. I spend 6-7 hours a day helping people pro bono because I believe that short-term rentals are still today the number one asset class to be investing in.
There you go. And the two podcasts you have start with the letters STR. What does this stand for?
Short-term rentals. So short-term STR Unfiltered is the raw, uninhibited version. There's some Gary V language on there, and it's the truth. There's no BS. It's, you know, I'm not trying to sell you anything. It's just a lot of people think that short-term rentals are easy. It's passive. Just throw up, you know, $100,000 at it and you're going to make boatloads of money. That was 100% the case, Chris, in 2020, 21, 22. Now we're back to reality. And you got to work a little bit harder at it. So we kind of uncover those things, those misconceptions.
Anything of value usually takes a little bit of hard work and a good strategy, and you always have to be adjusting and tweaking the model because nothing stays the same. That's what, one thing I learned in business is you can have a great model, but the next week it might have to change.
1,000%. I agree with that.
There you go. So give us a 30,000 overview of what you do and how you do it and what you're trying to accomplish in helping other people.
Well, one of the things that I found is I started, you know, making more money as I got older. I mean, I'm an older guy now. I'm 50. You know, I started my entrepreneur journey literally in high school selling t-shirts out of the back of my mom's 84 Tempo. Then I played professional golf for a little bit and, you know, kind of got into the real world of business. And what I found is the biggest problem was taxes. And that's how I kind of got lured into the short-term rental space. There's a thing called the short-term rental loophole that we don't get with long-term rentals if we're, you know, renting out a house we used to live in or apartments or whatever. So the tax advantages are significantly higher than other real estate investments, which real estate's great and land is great anyways. So as I started moving towards that seven-figure mark, and then when I eclipsed that, I knew I really had to get leveraged into it. Then when I dove into it, I live in Nashville, and from 2012, 2013, all the way through 18, it was the number one short-term rental or Airbnb market in the country. I never invested here because the regulation was so crazy and wonky. It was changing every week at almost every city council meeting. But what I found out is I had a couple of condos, long-term rents, like what most people do mm-hmm. in downtown, and I could do 7x in short-term rentals what I could do in the long-term rent.
Wow.
And that's really what opened my eyes to, you know, hey, maybe I should redeploy into this new asset class. How, and we thought we might have a 3, 4, 5 year run. You know, it's been over a decade now, and it's not going anywhere. As long as you're investing into markets that have sound historical regulation, and you're not investing into urban areas to where it's changing, like what's happened in Manhattan, Dallas, Honolulu, every city in California, you know, those types of places. So you got to be a little bit careful, but once you find a spot, it's extremely lucrative.
There you go. Now, would short-term rentals be basically Airbnb, or there be some variations of that?
So most people refer to short-term rentals as Airbnb, just like Kleenex or Uber or whatever, you know, so it becomes a brand. In regards to the booking platforms, I'm on Airbnb, I'm on Vrbo, TripAdvisor, I do direct bookings, all that type of stuff. But I invest in very specific markets. I stay away from the urban areas. I'm investing into specifically drive-in vacation rental markets. Oh. So I stay away from the Honolulus, the Hawaiis. I stay away from Alaska. I stay away from even Miami, which is a pretty big fly-in market. Puerto Rico's, Cabo. I'm investing into places like Gulf Shores, Western North Carolina, Banner Elk. And there's going to be a theme here, Chris. Cave Creek, Arizona, Smith Lake, Alabama, Whitefish, Montana. So kind of just to take a step back, well, why are you investing into those locations? Because I'm in Whitefish instead of Big Sky. I'm in Western North Carolina, Banner Elk, North Carolina, in between two ski resorts instead of Gatlinburg, Pigeon Forge, the Smokies. I went to Gulf Shores as opposed to Destin. Cave Creek as opposed to Scottsdale. So I invest into secondary and tertiary markets. One, because the entry price on the front end is anywhere from 20% to 50% lower. And I can generate the same revenue and I get the same tax benefits, right? So why would I want to go into those saturated markets that people have inflated the pricing on the front end? So I'm looking at the best deal. The same adage as everybody talks about in real estate. You make or break your deal on the entry when you're buying the property.
Ah, sounds like, you know, when you're setting up a business in retail, location, 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 you know, the rule of, you know, watching what your entry point is. Because I've seen that where people buy stupid stuff. I saw that in 2008 where people would buy properties. I had one friend, he bought 6 properties at $2,500 a month cost to him on a negative AM loan too. And he hadn't done the research, even after going to 5 or 6 real estate conferences, that $1,400 was the max the market would pay for what he had signed up for. And that was, of course, the 2008 crazies, but a good example. Let's see. Nina, thanks. Love it. Thanks for sharing your knowledge, Chris Voss. We certainly love it. Thanks for LinkedIn Live over there. So, Bill, give us a little bit about data on you. How did you grow up? How did you get into real estate? What was some of your upbringing? Were you always an entrepreneurial spirit? Did you have entrepreneurs in the family, et cetera, et cetera?
So I didn't have a father growing up. I got introduced to golf through the Big Brother program. Grew up in Bakersfield, California. Mom was a teacher. Grandparents on her side were a teacher. Don't know my father. And my mother bought a preschool in Bakersfield, California, my sophomore year in high school. And that's when I pretty much quit all my sports, quit football, basketball, soccer, focused on golf, and became the third ranked player coming out of high school in golf.
Wow.
But she couldn't afford to send me to the national tournaments. Oh, so no. We met a guy, ironically, playing a golf tournament in Los Angeles named Jay Jacoby. Mm-hmm. He was a t-shirt manufacturer. He gave me 20 shirts. I went back home. I didn't like him. I was a Lakers fan. I got all these Jordan and Bird and Karl Malone and Elijah. I don't want these fucking t-shirts. So I sold them for $25 a pop. My mom's like, hey, you need to repay Mr. Jacoby when we see him in another tournament. And long story short, he said, come to my house, gave me $100. And I started selling t-shirts out of my mom's 84 Tempo. Had two friends helping me do that. And that's what funded me to go play what was called the AJGA Tour, which was like the PGA Tour for junior golf. And, you know, I won my first tournament and got recruited, went to UCLA on a full ride, dropped out after 3 months.
Wow.
And my parents and grandparents, being in education, they didn't disown me, but they said, hey, if you're going to do that stupid move, you're going to take care of yourself.
So why'd you drop out?
What's that?
Why'd you drop out after 3 months?
I didn't like the coach. I didn't. Oh. We had no practice facilities. You know, I was, I don't want to say I was forced to go there. I had full ride offers to every university in the country. Mm-hmm. That's where my family wanted me to go for the education. I wanted to go to Stanford. It was actually, I couldn't get into Stanford, Chris. I'm not very smart. I mean, I'm a high school college dropout. I couldn't get literally 1150 on my SAT, or it would have been Tiger Woods, Nota Begay, Casey Martin, Bill Faith at Stanford. Wow. And I was the only one that wasn't smart enough to be able to get in. So next option was to go to UCLA.
Or I think back in those days, you had to buy the college to get in, didn't you?
I mean, I'll tell you what, Stanford was so hard. I was a third ranked player in the world and I couldn't get in, and I had a 1070 or 1080 Holy SAT. Crap. And, you know, I could get in almost every place else. I mean, I wasn't looking at Ivy League schools, but from West Point, UCLA, USC, you name it. Mm-hmm. And it kind of sucked. And so I kind of have this chip on my shoulder because I wanted to go with my friends. I grew up playing golf, traveling with Tiger and Note and all these guys.
Really? Wow.
And, you know, I had to go to UCLA. So I just didn't like the experience. I didn't like LA. I didn't like being in the hustle and bustle. Mm-hmm. We couldn't practice any place. So I said, F it. I'm going to quit and go back to Bakersfield and I'm going to turn professional. And if it was, I think we all, Chris, have these, I think everybody, regardless of where you were brought up, wealthy, poor, hood, you know, Beverly Hills, whatever, there's like a handful of opportunities that are put in front of us. And most of us don't see them. And if we see them, we can grasp onto them. And luckily, I had already built a network as a teenager of playing golf and getting good. There was a guy named Buck Owens in Bakersfield, California. He's hee-haw, the legend of country music. And he gave me $25,000 to go play professional golf. Wow. And he's no strings attached. All my friends were selling shares in themselves to be able to go out there at that time. Yeah. And I was able to parlay that. I'll never forget. I made like $380,000 as a 19-year-old college dropout my first year playing around the country, the TC Jordan Tour, the Hooters Tour. I went to South America, went to Asia, and I came back. And Jeff Stewart, who ended up being my best man at my wedding, said, dude, I know what you're going to do with this money. You're going to go to Vegas. You're going to party with your friend. You're going to blow it on playing craps and blackjack. So I bought a duplex. And he said, really? Why don't we buy a piece of real estate? And I didn't know shit from shit at that point.
Wow.
So literally, I bought a duplex. I held it for like 17 years before I sold it. It was crazy. And that was kind of my first foray into real estate. And I mean, as I've gone through all my startups, you talk about retail. I mean, we had 178 glow-in-the-dark miniature golf courses in shopping malls. I had a $34 million glow golf business, started the industry.
Wow.
It was even more, and probably the most important thing I ever did with that kind of small mom-and-pop family entertainment center. It wasn't just the shopping mall and like the gross sales per square foot in the traffic. It was the location in the mall. Because you could go to an end of a mall where a Sears was and it's dead. Nobody goes down there.
Yeah.
But then you got Apple or IKEA or whatever on the other side or another wing, and that's where all the traffic would migrate to. So I learned a really valuable lesson in retail real estate that I was able to parlay when I jumped into the real estate game, which started with long-term like everybody else. I did some commercial as well, some industrial. And now, to be perfectly honest, it's 100% into short-term rentals.
Wow.
Not only because of the cash flow, and because of the X I can do above LTR, but it's also because of those tax benefits, taking advantage of cost segregation studies and accelerated depreciation.
There you go. And so you're talking about where you choose your properties, and it sounds like that's a real name of the game thing. I imagine being places where maybe there isn't so much hotel competition or other rental property competition. Is that another key?
I would say that most people steer away when you hear the word saturation, like the big markets.
Yeah.
I look for traffic drivers. So I look at a market like Hot Springs, Arkansas, which I personally am not interested in, but it's in the middle of the country. There's not a whole lot going on outside of like Lake of the Ozarks and Branson and that type of stuff. So Hot Springs, Arkansas has four traffic drivers. It's got a lake, a national park within a mile of downtown. It's got a horse track and it's got a casino all within the downtown area. So if one or two of those goes down, Chris, people are still coming there. It's the redneck Riviera for all of those things. And it's awesome. So it's a great investable market. Now the city's locked down to where they limited just under 500 permits. So everybody's flooding the Lake Hamilton around the outside of the city limits. Similar things are happening in Asheville, North Carolina. So I kind of look at the McDonald's methodology. What happens in every street when McDonald's goes in America Burger King, Wendy's, Kentucky Fried Chicken, everybody follows behind them because they're the best at the market research. Mm-hmm. So if you go to a market like in Ogallala, Nebraska, which probably 99.9% of your listeners have never heard of before, they have one stoplight there and you get a great deal on a property, there's no traffic. Nobody's going there. So you're not going to make any money. Yeah. So what I do is I build what's called super properties. And that has nothing to do with like the size or anything. It has to do with identifying the right location, proximity, views, mm-hmm. or access. And mm-hmm. then we build it out to be unique, not like crazy Disney theme stuff, but tied to the buyer persona. One thing I learned early on in my life is that when I became a marketer, and then I learned from Dharmesh Shah and Brian Halligan, the two founders of HubSpot, and lived in their ecosystem for 13 years, we have to determine who we're selling to. So I determine before I even purchase a property, who my ideal guest is going to be, who my buyer is going to be. And then I design the entire house. My wife's my designer. From furniture to decor to amenities to everything we're going to do to market around it for that one person. I'm not trying to be everything to everybody. You're not talking about cooking and all that type of stuff on here and OnlyFans and whatever. There's that kind of specific buyer persona. And I think that's what people miss. And that starts before you even purchase the property.
So that sounds like a really another important technique on the other ones you have. And so do you target like a high-end sort of person that has money and they want like a more of a luxury experience? Or do you vary it depending upon, I guess, the market you're in and what you're trying to accomplish?
All of the above, but even when I'm going after a low price point, like I bought my first condo, I typically only invest in single family homes or motels. I bought my first condo. It's 3 miles to the entrance of Glacier National Park in Montana. And it's super high end luxury, but it's still just a 2-bedroom condo.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to put in the amenities and make it marketable and attractive to what I would call wealthy Wendy and wealthy Walter. So it's the small things, like we spend about $250 putting in a coffee bar inside the master suite, which is typically where the booker is going to stay. And then we market that to them. Hey, wake up, jump out of bed, smell the aroma of the Colombian roasted coffee, grab your cup, throw the curtains open and stare right into Glacier National Park, sitting on your balcony, looking into the park.
That's probably a bunch of moose running around.
What's that?
Probably with a bunch of moose running around.
There's moose, there's bear, there's all that cool stuff. Yeah. But that creates the marketing opportunity. So one thing that I've looked at and I've learned in all of my startups, even if you put short-term rentals aside, from the glow-in-the-dark miniature golf business, I was drop shipping Brazilian bikinis when I was playing the South American PGA Tour in AOL chat rooms and on Netscape in the early 90s. I had 6 restaurants in California. It's finding the marketing opportunities, right? So if I can find a way to position and market my business and I have a good product or service, it doesn't even have to be the most exceptional. All the Android people will debate that their phone is better than Apple. And I say, I don't give a shit. Steve Jobs figured out how to brand it and market it better than Android did.
Yeah.
That's why they're bigger.
Yeah.
So I'm always looking at how I'm going to market it. If I find a property, if I find a business and I can't conceptualize a marketing plan internally in my 8-inch head here, then I'm not going to make that investment.
So it sounds like you're creating experiences, as it were, where, you know, when people come to your property, they're going to have, you know, kind of an experience, or they may be coming to a locale that's experiential.
1,000%. Most of that starts outside before it goes inside. That's one of the reasons I don't really like investing into condos unless you can build a moat around the investment and insulate yourself from other competition. I have another property in Montana. I'll just describe it to you and give you a really quick example. You pull in and it is literally a boring cabin on the front end. But when you walk in and you look out these massive windows and you can see up the river that's only 25 feet away from my back deck and it's beautiful. It's Montana, these snow-capped trees. Then there's a lake 100 yards. You can see the lake. And then you see the Canadian Rockies literally in Canada on the other side of the lake. And then we come in and we drop in barrel sauna outside with windows to see up the view. We drop in a hot tub. We give them the paddle boards, the kayaks, the fly fishing gear, put in all this stuff. And then a clear dome with a telescope and a couch, and it's heated to where out in the snow. And I'm going there on Saturday to where literally you can sit outside and just stare up at the stars in the big sky and drink a nice glass of wine. That's the experience that we try to create at all of our properties.
There you go. And up there you can see the sky really well, you know, when there's not a city of lights around.
It's incredible.
I love when I drive between California and Vegas at night and I get I get in that middle part where there's nothing, and you can step out and see the sky. Usually when I'm peeing on the side of the road.
That's just outside of Barstow after you've stopped it in and out.
It's somewhere in between there, you know, and it's usually whenever there's the call of nature comes, but I'll get out of the car, and it's usually one of those dead off ramps that they have out there. Where
what's that road, Chris? It's like XXZZYY. You know which one I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. We used to use that when we used to play the alphabet game. We were traveling as kids with our parents, and you'd always be, you know, you'd try to get to X and Z so that you knew by the time you'd hit that sign, your first one to see it, call it. But yeah, it's somewhere out there on the roads. You know, you get off at the off ramp, and you're like, I'm pretty sure there's 5 serial killers here in this bush. And if I can pee and look up the stars quick enough and jump in my car, I'm sure I'll escape. But right. And I've gotten away with it so far. But I'm not very capturable either. Like, no one wants me. I'm not good looking enough, evidently. But I got rejected by my Catholic priest too when I was young. And I guess, what can you say? I wasn't the cutest boy in the room. Anyway, jokes aside. So is that the full definition of a super property then? Or is there anything we were missing in that term?
The definition of a super property is maxing out your return on investment. So we measure in a couple of different ways. Cash on cash return based on how much cash you're going to put into a property. Internal rate of return. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's one of the reasons how I've been able to build a portfolio that generates $2.4 million a year in revenue and net over $1 million with only 13 properties.
Yeah.
Because I have this program. It's called the 550-250 plan.
Okay.
One investment, 5 years, 5 properties, netting $50,000 a year. It's that simple. That's how you get to $250,000 a year in net income. One of the fundamental mistakes that people make when they invest into real estate is they're banking on the appreciation, and like 47% of people are taking out interest-only loans. So they're not doing debt pay down. So if you look at a couple of factors in the short-term rental space, you get tremendous tax benefits, cost segregation studies, Augusta rules, all this stuff that happens. But if you pay down your debt and then you leverage your cash flow, right? It's what I did when I started. I spent $126,000 on my first property. And I made a really bad mistake when I was a newbie in my second property and lost $125,000.
Ooh,
so I had to recover from that. It set me back almost 2 years. Mm-hmm. And because I wasn't, you know, a rich, you know, hedge fund guy when I started by any means.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then I figured everything out. And if I can literally start with that one investment, which is what we did, we had to wait for cash flow out of that one property before we could buy the second one again. And then now we have 50,000 from each property. So within a year, I'm buying number three. Mm-hmm. When I get to the end of year three, even in the way the market has been the last 2.5 years, appreciation is good enough in these markets that I'm investing in. And I teach people how to invest in to where they can reposition property number one, if they're paying down their equity, their debt. So now they've gained equity, and we do what's called a cash on equity audit. And if you're making $20,000 a year net, and you have $200,000 in equity in your property, that's 10 years to get there. That is 100% sell. And there then reposition that $200,000 into one or two investments. You can even split it at that point. Mm-hmm. So that's, I basically followed that exact formula and just stacked that three times to get to where I'm at today. And I got 31,000 students that I've taught how to do it as well.
There you go. So that net is exclusionary to the depreciation, right? If you're getting in addition to that, right?
That is correct. 100%.
Wow. So there you go. Yeah. When you have good income, you need something to write the hell off.
Well, I mean, you look at these guys like, you know, let's just use former President Trump or, you know, Bezos, who owns a ton of land, Ted Turner, the largest landowner in the United States. There's a reason they're not paying.
Is he still alive?
I think he passed away a few years ago.
Okay.
But he was he had like over 3 million acres of land or something like that.
I think he owned half of Wyoming or something.
Exactly. There's a reason those guys pay little to no tax, making a gazillion dollars a year. And it's because of the benefits of real estate.
I need to do more of that. Of course, I bury a lot of stuff in business, but I need to do more of that because I don't have any kids. So I don't have those sweet exemptions everyone has. Although evidently if I move to Alabama and get a 12 pack of eggs in my fridge, I can now take exemptions. So that's another thing for that matter. So talk to us about what you're doing for people, what offerings you have. I'm looking at your website. You've got multiple websites, of course. Tell about some of the offerings you have on your website, How can people work with you, onboard you? How are you trying to help them, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I would tell everybody, if you're interested in this at all, is check out my Build Short-Term Rental Wealth Facebook group. There's over 30,000 people in that group. As soon as I get done with you, Chris, we have a Marketing Mondays. We teach in it every single week.
There you go. I actually just joined it while we were talking. So
nice. Thank you. Yeah, there you I've go. Got an Inner Circle program. I've got everything. I coach for free. I'm getting ready to go on a global tour. I'm going to 15 cities across the US and Europe this summer to do one-day boot camps everywhere from LA to, you know, Zurich, Switzerland. But really, if you're just getting started, I've got a program called the Inner Circle Program. I've got my five most successful mastermind students behind that. It's a year-long kind of group. And we take people, it's the curriculum is specifically for 0 to 5 properties. You're just getting in. We teach you on the underwriting process. We give you the performas to be able to do it. All the tools that you need to be able to be successful and not make the mistakes that I made and other people make in the early stages. But I mean, we've, like most people, Chris, we've got programs that are free to $67 a month, all the way up to $25,000 and $50,000 a year for the advanced investors. And they can see all that at buildshorttermrentalwealth.com.
There you go. What motivates you want to help other people and share your wealth and knowledge and you know, try and get people going next level?
I think it goes back to, I mean, one, my mother being a single mother, you know, I'm an only child, my grandparents, but probably a guy named Chris, actually, who was my big brother through the Big Brothers Big Sisters program when he introduced me to golf. Oh, wow. And that fundamentally, when I was 12 years old, it changed my life. Not only with him introducing me to a game that gave me a competitive advantage in everything that I've done in my adult life because I excelled at it, the doors that it opened, the access, but also the disciplines that I learned, the self-motivation, the discipline, because you don't have coaches, you don't have teammates to push you. Right? A lot of independence, you know, happens going through a sport like that. And I think that's really what shaped my life, and I'll never forget that. That's why I'm a big supporter of Big Brothers, Big Sisters today.
There you go. It's good to have. And then you had some people help you along the way. The guy gave you, was it 25 grand?
Yeah, Buck Owens. I mean, yeah. I've been fortunate to have, you know, 4 or 5 really significant mentors in my life. Reg Booth was my business. He was the third franchisee in the Pizza Hut back in the day. And he was my business partner, and I was the sweat equity, and he's the one that turned me into a millionaire through our Glow Golf business. You know, a guy, John Bearden, who taught me a life plan, which birthed my success planner and kind of took me in 2015 from doing all the startups and chasing money, you know, to getting 100% aligned with my spouse and architecting what I wanted my outcome to be. And, you know, since 2015, I've literally 18-19x'd, you know, my net worth and my income since then because of that intentionality of the outcome, being able to distill that down to more sound daily decisions.
There you go. And now you're helping people, you're paying it forward, paying it back, all that good stuff that people are successful do. Is there a minimum net worth or income that people need to have to start working with you at any
level? You actually don't need a dollar. So I own a lot, like you said, in the portfolio, $19 million worth of real estate, but I also co-host, right? And co-hosting means that you can start with $0.
Oh, really?
It costs nothing to where you can identify properties that are underperforming and then learn how to, you know, basically I'll teach you how to do this with no investment. So if you don't have $100,000 to get started, it's okay. You basically start by hosting for somebody else and you do the marketing and guest communication and the revenue management for them. You got to learn those skills, but there's a lot of properties that are out there that are underperforming. Probably close to 80% of the properties that are out there are the kind of set it and forget it mentality, especially because so many people got in during the gold rush, 2020 through 2022. And those are the ones that need help today.
Yeah, I see a lot of those people complaining that don't have the format that you have. And now I realize why they're complaining. You know, they just bought an Airbnb, you know, set up thinking, oh, just, you know, let anybody come. And of course, you know, they get all sorts of the weirdness, the crazy partiers. And, and you know, they're like, we're not renting. Like, no one's renting here. And they're probably in, you know, markets that are highly competitive. And they just didn't really think about it. They just, I mean, basically their model was, we'll get a house and turn it into a short-term rental.
Put it on Airbnb. I remember you mentioned 2008 earlier, right? You remember what happened? It sounds like you're from California. Remember Palmdale and Lancaster when they bulldozed like 4,000 homes there going into 2009 and 10 out of the crash? That's what's happened to those average properties. The people that have been, that one, don't go fly and see the properties on their, put their own eyes on it, don't know how to underwrite them, don't have performas, and then they just set it and forget it. Even though it's a passive income, according to the IRS, it does take work. So I co-host 11 super properties. I own 13 properties. So that's 24 total. I'm still spending 7 to 10 hours a week combined. Now, it's not 20, it's not 40, it's not 50. It's easy. Once we don't know what we don't know. Once we know and we learn the technology and how to automate and do that type of stuff, which is fairly simple to figure out, to be honest with you, then it becomes an extreme time saver. So I do probably 5 to 7 hours a week, maybe 8 or 9, 10 hours on a bad week, but I don't get partiers. I don't have to deal with that stuff because of how I vet, you know, what I put in my regulations, my parameters, and then also because of the price point. You're going to get way more partiers, you know, in Santa Monica or downtown Nashville or Vegas, you know, at $200 a night than you will charging, you know, $800, $900. And my average ADR, that's an average daily rate, is around $1,100 a night.
Wow. There you go. So that's definitely a higher income thing. That's somebody who's looking to spend some money.
And that's intentional because that's insulated, right? I mean, if we go into a downturn, and my guests, you know, average seven figures and they lose 20%, they're still going to take that $15,000 vacation.
Yeah.
If it's blue collar Bob and I have $100 or $125 a night property and I'm looking at two families coming to my 3-2, right, that make $75,000 to say $150,000, they lose 20%. That's life changing. That means some kids not going to college. Some we're getting rid of a car. We're making significant cuts. So that's kind of every business that I've ever done has always elevated to that top price point. It's what I call price elasticity, not just dynamic pricing, but stretching that as high as I can go so I can insulate myself when times get tough.
There you go. Give you that nice fine buffer. So give people a final pitch out on how they can onboard with you, how they can reach out to you, how they can utilize you, all that good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, basically, we teach everything. I built a super team. I have the best attorney. I have the best CPA. I have the best real estate agent in the short-term rentals that handles the entire country, every Carl. So basically, we help you soup to nuts to get started or to scale. I've got masterminds. I've got, you know, self-driven programs, anything that you want. I would start by getting in that Build Short-Term Rental Wealth Facebook group or just going to buildshorttermrentalwealth.com. Shoot me a message. I personally answer. You can even DM me on Instagram. Bill Faith, that's F-A-E-T-H 73, and I will be the one to answer your DM to help you. I spend, Chris, probably 15, 20 hours a week pro bono just trying to help people get started so they don't make the mistakes that I made when I first got started.
That's spectacular, man. That is awesome, man. That is awesome. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it, man. We got all the .coms in there, right?
We did. I think we got them all.
There you go. Thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it, and thanks for helping people get to the next level.
Thank you, Chris. Have a wonderful day.
There you go. Thanks, audience, for tuning in. Go to goodreads.com, Fortress Chris Foss, LinkedIn.com, Fortress Chris Foss, Chris Foss, one of the TikTokity, and all those crazy places on the internet. Thanks for tuning in. Be good to each other. Stay safe, and we'll see you guys next time. And that should have us out.